Hey, it's Conrad with the First Responder Wellness Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. We have a very special episode today and a very special guest on the show today. This week is National Telecommunicators Week. And so as a part of that, I was able to sit down a few weeks ago with Ricardo Martinez. And if you're in the 911 community and don't know who Ricardo is, you've been living under a rock. He has one of the biggest podcasts out there, one of the biggest shows out there online for 911 telecommunicators. And it's my privilege and honor to have him on the program to talk about what he does, to tell some of the funny stories and the crazy stories that have impacted him. And we also just forewarn you that we also talk at length about our friend, Nicole Ford, who unfortunately lost her battle with depression back last year. And so we talk about her, talk about her legacy, her story in this podcast. So Ricardo played a key role in her life in sharing her story early on. And of course, she is also in my film, PTSD 911. So we talk about that. And so this conversation is funny, it's inspiring, and there's some really special moments here that I think you'll appreciate. So welcome to the program. And hey, if you are brand new to this podcast, thank you. Thank you for stopping in to listen. Thank you for watching on YouTube. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. Click the subscribe button. Make sure that you get those notifications whenever we have a new show, either on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen on your audio device. Or if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to hit the bell so you know, get those notifications of when we have a new episode. And also, if you subscribe on YouTube, you'll also get access to all of our extra things that we produce. Have almost daily shorts that put on little inspirational things that I think about each day and post it. And then we also have a recap of our Coast to Coast bicycle tour last summer. So I think we posted episode 6 last week, and we have a new one coming out soon in a few weeks. So please be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You get all that content there. And if you appreciate what you hear and what you see, please share with your network. I would really appreciate that. And now here's my conversation with Ricardo Martinez. Ricardo, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. It's so great to see you.
Hello. Thank you for the invite. And I apologize. It's been forever, but I'm excited to be here finally. There's been a lot of stuff going
on. Yeah, well, just so the audience knows, I've been bugging this guy for, I don't know, a year or so to get on the show. But I know you're a busy guy. You have doing some amazing work in the first responder community, and especially for 911.
Thank you.
So I know you're busy. So thanks for taking time to talk to little old me today.
Hey, like I said, I'm excited. It's an honor. And I've been watching you these, past years well, traveling all over the place with the documentary and everything. And big props to you. I applaud you. Very nice. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been really exciting. And this year's, we started off with a bang last week with a couple of screenings up in Maine. And, our mutual friend, Nicole, was kind of front of mind for everyone there because we were with her family actually, and did a screening there. That was a really powerful moment to be there with her family, and we actually stayed with her family. So they invited us to stay in their house, and they gave us a lobster feast one night, and it was really. So if you ever get to go to Maine, go stay with the Ford family. They'll treat you right.
Oh, for sure. Sounds good. Yeah. I'm glad that you were able to be out there and have that experience as well.
Yeah, it was really, as fun as it was a solemn evening, really, to be there in her community where Nicole basically grew up and spent a lot of her young adult years, and to get to meet some of her friends and family, and just to be there and to mourn. To continue to mourn, the loss that we had this past year. And if you don't know what we're talking about, so Nicole Ford was a 911 dispatcher who was one of the three primary characters in our film, PTSD 911. And she lost her battle with depression this past August. And it was really kicking the teeth for us. And we miss her every day. And but the work that she has done for herself and the work that she has done for the 911 community continues to grow. And we'll talk about some of these things in the next few minutes with Ricardo. So, but first, I want to kind of dive into you. Give us the cliff notes of your story for those people who in the audience who may not know who you are.
Yeah, of course. So I'm the founder of Within the Trenches Media. I'm also the creator and host of Within the Trenches podcast, True Stories from the 911 Dispatchers Who Live Them. And I'm also the founder of the I Am 911 movement, as well as an author for Imagine Listening, Your Worst Day Is Our Every Day. Everything that I do started out during my dispatching career. Mm-hmm. So I was a 911 dispatcher on the line, as well as on the line supervisor. Started out in Florida, finished off my career in Southwest Michigan, in the county that I grew up in, actually. And during that time, ended up hitting a burnout stage, like a lot of us end up doing in any profession, really, but especially, you know, in public safety. You end up hitting a burnout stage. And I was at that point, and, you know, I loved what I was doing. But there was so many things that were going on that I hit that burnout, and I needed to find a way to kind of just reignite, you know, my passion and my love for 911, because I was bleeding gold, as dispatch is known, that thin gold line. And I go back to school, and during the time that I was in school, I was doing a bunch of different projects, and they were all based on public safety, on 911 rather. And really the reason for it was because of my struggle in dispatch, the hard calls that I was taking, that stigma that if you are asking for help, you're weak. And I would bury those calls and learn the hard way that wasn't the thing to do. And I ended up deciding, well, I don't care what people think. I'm going to share my story. So I started writing about them.
Do you think that, I'm going to jump in here real quick. Do you think that of making that decision to share your story was really a pivotal moment for you on your journey to wellness? Do you think that has had a big role to play in what you're doing, obviously what you're doing now, but in being mentally well, mentally fit?
Yeah, it all started there. It all started with me writing about my calls and talking about them, because I mean, they were just basically festering inside me. They were just there, and I didn't know where to go, what to do. I was one of those folks, like a lot of us, who end up saying, I leave it all at work, which is crap, because you don't just leave it at work. You end up coming home and you're distant.
Hey, can you talk to my wife about that? Because she's a school administrator, and sometimes it comes home.
There you go. Just need to talk a little more about it. But yeah. But you know, I would tell my wife some of those harder calls, and she would just kind of be like, I don't know what to say. And I would say, I just need you to kind of listen. But then after, you know, a couple of those times, I thought, I don't want her to have to deal with this, in the sense that I don't want her to have to kind of live what I'm living right now with some of these calls. So I need to find an outlet. And that's what it was when I went to school, I've got all of these big projects that I'm doing, but it's all based on dispatch and sharing what it is that we're doing. And it started out with those main projects, and the podcast ended up coming from that. But Within the Trenches started as a segment in my blog that I had, where I was just writing about it. And, you know, the folks that I worked with, the higher ups, they had told me, no, don't do it. We don't want to get sued. And I said, well, I understand, but I was a part of that as well. And I think that a lot of other folks will learn from it, and maybe they will want to open up too. And they're, you know, they said, no, don't do it. But at this time I was a supervisor, and I'll never forget this. I was walking out of my deputy director's office. I was bummed out, and I remembered something, big old light bulb moment. And I walked back in, and I said, didn't you guys tell us that you're not allowed to regulate our feelings online? And she goes, well, yeah, why? And I said, thank you. And she goes, you're going to do it anyway, aren't you? I said, yeah, I am. I am going to do it anyway. And I did. And it helped me to be able to really just get it out, right? And I felt so much better. It was therapeutic to be able to do it. And it was, like you were saying, it was that point, that decision to go back to school and start sharing it, not caring what anybody else would think, but also because even going to get my haircut, people would ask what I do. Mm-hmm. And I would think, do I tell mm-hmm. them? Because that question is going to come mm-hmm. out of what's the worst call.
Was that scary for you to start kind of being more vulnerable and sharing your story?
It was a little bit, yes, because I was still in the back of my mind kind of afraid, like, what are people going to mm-hmm. think? Are they going to think that I'm doing it for clout? Mm-hmm. You know,
attention.
Am I mm-hmm. right? Yeah. He's attention seeking. No, I was trying to get some help for myself. If you're talking about attention and people wanting to also get help, then hey, then okay. Yeah. But personal help, like clout, like, hey, look at mm-hmm. me, you know, pick me. This is what I'm doing. No, mm-hmm. it wasn't that at all. But that fear was mm-hmm. there, you know, are people going to listen to this? Are they going to want to learn more? Do people respect this profession enough to mm-hmm. want to learn more? And I remember thinking, I'm going to kind of make them want to learn more because these are powerful stories yeah. and they're interesting. And if the person cutting my hair wants to know what I do and why I do it, then why not take this chance to educate the public?
Sure.
But not just the public, but others in public safety as well.
When people did listen, because I mean, mm-hmm. you have quite an audience now, and you've been doing this now for what, 10 years?
Yeah, it's
congratulations, 2020. Man.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's, you know, and a lot of people that I talk to, they're like, this happened just overnight, huh? And I go, no, no, I've been doing this for over 10 years yeah. now, and it didn't start out the way everything is now. I mean, there was some media attention. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up being on the front page of the local newspaper. An ABC affiliate came out and did a report on what I was doing. They dubbed it back then in 2013 mm-hmm. as reality radio. which I thought was kind of cool. I was like, all right, yeah. Because, I mean, podcasts were just like right. starting to come out. And I'll say this really quick, Conrad. When I first started presenting this to the county, I was in there in a meeting with my then co-host, and who was her name is Whitney, and she was my co-host for a while. She was also on my team. I was her supervisor. Mm. She's now the deputy director there at the wow. center that mm. I was working at. But there were folks there that had no idea what a podcast mm. was. So I had a slide in the presentation that actually had a definition of what a podcast is. That's how early it wow. was that I started
it's
doing
like radio,
this,
but on the internet.
Yeah. And when we start doing this, I mean, I would ask myself sometimes, Am I doing something that people are really getting mm-hmm. something out of? And I would get emails from people saying, I thought I was the only one who felt a certain way, and keep doing what you're doing. You know, a deputy of mine who's, you know, former active military, a real, like, really hard and straightforward type person, sent me a message, and he goes, I've learned more in the first three episodes of your show about dispatch than the 20 mm. plus year career that I have. Keep doing what you're doing. So I thought, I've got something. Mm. I got to keep going. But it didn't happen overnight. Right. I mean, like the first even 5 years, I was just going. I was going with my passion. It was all passion. Mm-hmm. You know, people talk about,
you probably did it for free. You weren't getting paid for it.
Right. Yeah. There wasn't yeah. sponsors. There wasn't anything. Mm-hmm. This was my passion, and it still is. It's what I love to do. And, but yeah, I laugh sometimes when people say it just happened overnight. It's like,
it's an overnight success.
There's
very few overnight successes in reality. I mean, you know,
right.
There's maybe a few that got lucky on American Idol or something, or yeah, you know, those shows, you know, but very yeah. few have been, you know, and that's why, you know, I keep churning out content, and it's like, mm-hmm. okay, I need to get there at some point. I need to get where Ricardo's at sometime to have all these sponsors and to be able to do this. So I just got to keep, you know, pushing out content. And it's hard. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, people need to understand that these podcasts are hard work. You know, a show like this will take me maybe an hour to interview, but then it'll take me 3 or 4 hours to edit and to create the pieces for it and to do all the things to get it show ready, you know, to put out there. And so it's a lot of work, and I'm not complaining about that. Yeah. It's just the reality of doing what we do, what we chose to do.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. That is the reality.
So how do you get, So how do you convince people to come on your show? Perhaps people who aren't familiar or aren't comfortable in front of a camera or in front of a microphone. Well, most of your people are in front of a microphone because they're on the phone.
Right? That's true. That's yeah. True.
So, but right. How do you convince them to kind of start to unpacking their stories? I mean, that's got to be a challenge sometimes.
I think it's the same way with the Imagine Listening session that I do at conferences. So, you know, in the beginning, because this was so new, what I would do is I would email back and forth. And if somebody wanted to talk on the phone, then we would talk on the phone. But I would say what it is that I was doing, my vision of it, not just what I was doing, but why I was doing it. And I think that's what it was that really started bringing people in, and they wanted to do this as well. It was the reason. Mm-hmm. It was why I was doing this. And I said, you know, you're part of this journey with me, and we are going to show the world how important these stories are in the job that we do. So let's just go for it. And the reason I mentioned the sessions as well is because it's a room full of people that are sharing hard stories.
So that's like live and in person at a conference or convention, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's at a conference, and there's sometimes, you know, 100 or so people in there, and I'm getting in my steps, walking back and forth, handing microphones over, but I also record those pieces because people, they learn from those tough stories. And it's not all hard stories. There's some saves as well. But what I do is I share a piece of myself first so that the audience can relate, and then they feel comfortable opening up as well.
So speak to those people who are leaders out there in 911 or even in public safety in general. I often say that if a leader shows that they're vulnerable and can get to tell their story, it kind of makes it okay for the people that work for them to do the same, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. There have been moments where I have done this session, and I know that there are directors in there. And a lot of times at the end, I'll say, for those of you who are in here that are leadership, administration, whichever, director, assistant director, however you want to see it, you just heard what your people are going through. What are you going to do to continue to help them? Because this is step one. They've just opened the door. They've walked through by sharing that story. What are you going to do? The cool thing, though, is that a lot of times those folks are sharing stories, too, and they're emotional and they're letting it out. And I think what I love the most is when I leave that room and I hear a bunch of the attendees talking already, talking and sharing those stories. So, again, like for those leaders, for them to be able to share as well, that's huge. Yeah. That's a big thing, because a lot of times you don't get to see some of those in leadership or in admin that are there, especially the directors. The directors are usually off, you know, doing all the meetings with all the other department heads or whichever. But then when you get to see them later on, if you get to see them, of course, and they're sharing as well, man,
yeah,
that is just, it's a good, to me, that's a good combination to start building such a good culture in your center, to let people know that this is a safe place. You can share without fear of judgment. Yeah.
You know, a few weeks ago, I was talking to a fire chief in one of the events that we were doing, and I was challenging him because he was like, well, you know, I don't know if I want to, I'm doing okay. And I could clearly see he wasn't okay. And I said, you know, when you were young as a firefighter, you wanted to be at the nozzle. Every firefighter, they want to be first in the door, handling that nozzle, and the others following in, you know, into the burning house. And I said, you as a fire chief, you as a leader can be on the nozzle for wellness. If you take care of yourself first, your people are going to follow you.
That's perfect. Yeah. It's the example that you want to set, but also that, you know, those on the front line want to see as well. I mean, I always say it starts at the top. The problem isn't always at the top, right? But if you have that buy-in at the top and it goes down and people are seeing it, they're going to follow. Like that's someone that I would follow. Someone who is being vulnerable, someone who's being open and sharing themselves, and just moving towards the same mission and goal and everything, that's who I would love to work for.
So have you ever been in a show with someone doing a recording, doing a podcast, and you realize, boy, this person, I need to direct them to some, do some help?
You know, I have, I'm working on episode 536. Wow. And a lot of the folks who have come on have already kind of taken that step. There, I would say there's been a couple that we've talked later, you know, off air, of course, right? And I've asked, like, do you need anything? Is there anyone that I can direct you to? And a lot of the times, you know, the those folks will end up saying, just being able to talk and get it out, whether it was recorded or not, just being able to get a chance to talk, that's what I needed. And I say, okay, well, if you need anything, either let me know, I can direct you somewhere, or reach out to your folks, because there are people there that are there to help.
Well, it reminds me of, we had a guy in our film who's, I guess he kind of plays a bit role in the film. In the middle of the documentary, there's kind of a segment where I feature some other agencies and organizations. And we had this one guy, we were down in Texas, and he is a detective with a police agency, and tough old guy, kind of grizzled face, and just, you know, curse like a sailor and smoke like a chimney and just all those things. And man, he did not want to tell his story, but he had a powerful story. And we finally convinced him, along with the officer I was, you know, working with, we convinced him to sit in front of the camera and for 30 minutes tell his story. Well, at the premiere, which happened in that local community, he came out and he shook my hand and he said, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to tell my story, because now every time I tell that story, I heal just a little bit more.
That's amazing.
And it was like, okay, you know.
You're doing the right thing.
The right thing.
Yeah. I fully agree. And I feel it, because there have been a few times, a few years ago in North Carolina, I did Imagine Listening. I was their keynote speaker, but I did Imagine Listening. And it was in this amphitheater, which was crazy, because that's where they had all of the industry partners in there showing off all the new tech and everything. But they had the stage. And I remember asking them, so which room am I doing Imagine Listening in? They're like, you're doing it in this room. And I thought, oh, okay. So I'm in there and we're sharing stories, and those industry partners, within the first couple stories, just from the intro, they walked up and they were listening. Mm. And later on, they came to me and they said, I had no idea. If you ever need anything, let me know, because this is a good thing. And the reason I bring this up as well is because later on, there was a person who walked up to me and said, hey, I didn't have the courage at the time to share one of my stories, but I would like to share one with you now, if you don't mind. And I said, of course, go ahead and share that story. And he did. And he was, you know, he was crying and everything. And I asked him if I could give him a hug. And he said, yes. And, you know, we embraced and he just let go. And I said, thank you for sharing that with me. And then, you know, he said, thanks as well, and walked off. And I remember standing there for a moment just thinking, wow, that was, it's hard to explain. Like, I can't even explain the feeling, but it was a really good moment.
I want to share this with you, and I don't think I've told you this, but the week after Nicole passed, and I was up in Maine for her celebration of life service, and the family, you know, asked me to speak a few words, and so I did. And that next week, we had a film screening. I was like, what do I do with this? You know, how do I share this information? And so I actually had a conversation with Jim Marshall connected me with a leading suicidologist. And for 45 minutes, I was sitting outside the venue in my car and I was talking to the suicidologist saying, how do I tell the story? You know, how do I tell the audience that's going to be in this room tonight, you know, about Nicole? And so after the film was over and we shared, and I shared this, that Nicole had passed, a gentleman came up to me after that, and he said, I want to tell you this. Nicole saved my life. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, she was on a podcast a while back and told her story. She was on your podcast, Ricardo.
What?
And this gentleman heard her tell her story. And he said, because she said that she was willing to go get help, I was willing to go get help, and it saved my life.
Wow. I've got goosebumps right now. That's that power in storytelling. Yeah. I don't think we've ever talked about that before. Wow. That is powerful.
Yeah. So what you're doing is saving lives, literally.
Thank you for sharing that. There's moments where, and I think we all go through this, where when we're doing something, we wonder, are we making a difference? You know, and I explained it recently as, you know, the work that we do sometimes is like a drop in the water. And it's those ripples that end up coming out that you don't really think about. You know, a good friend of mine, his name's Gary, he's out of New Jersey. He talks a lot about those ripples, and it makes me think about that. And this is exactly that type of example. It's, you don't ever really know the impact, right, that you're putting out there until you have a full circle moment like this.
Sure. And that's something that I hope that, you know, this program does is impact people. And obviously the film has had that kind of impact on people all over the place. And we're really excited about that and be able to continue those conversations. And I think that's what's important too, is to help people have those conversations, those deeper conversations that they need to have. And I know your program does that. And in some way, my film does that as well, is to get those. And sometimes it kickstarts those conversations that otherwise may not happen, right?
Right. There's a lot that that comes out from, and it's why programs like yours and mine and others that are out there, as you were saying, are important. And people learn so much during this time. That's why I fell in love with this form of storytelling, because it's especially long form storytelling, because you end up learning so much about a person, and then later on, you find out that you somehow impacted someone. Mm-hmm. And if I can really quick just share a story with you. When I first met Nicole, it was either 2019 or 2020, one of the two. And it, of course, before everything, you know, went crazy, before we all went to lockdown time, but it was at a Nina's Standards and Best Practices Conference. They were going to have a critical issues forum that had to do with all mental health and wellness. And she was going to share her story. And I had heard about her. Someone had told me about her. So I reached out and asked if she would be willing to be on the podcast. And she said, yeah, let's do it. And we recorded in the little restaurant area of this hotel that we were in. Luckily, I had everything set up right so that it was just like ambiance, right? The background noise. And she told her story. And it was one of the most amazing moments to be sitting there with her and hear her share her story, what she went through and how she came back. And then to sit there front row. And I remember her saying, I wish I had a camera or something to record myself so that my friends can see this or my family. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure I have enough space on my phone. I can record it for you. So I was sitting up front. I had my phone and I'm holding it. And I swear, like, you can even see it in the video where it moves a little bit, because I have to adjust my arms. And at the end of it, I told her, because it was a little over an hour that I'm sitting like this. And I told her at the end of it, when I send it to you, I hope you don't get motion sickness, because there's a couple times where I move a little bit. And she goes, I'm just glad that there was someone there to be able to record it. And what I want to get to is just her spirit and her passion, just all of it. And for wanting to help, it was all there. And it was so special. Like, looking down at my desktop screen right now, I can see the clip for the video. It's sitting right here. I have it on my desktop. But really quick, later on that night, she loved barbecue. And we went to this barbecue place downtown in Austin. And we sat right next to each other and we were chowing down. And there was a bunch of us there. We were so full that we walked, I think it was four blocks back to the hotel. but we stopped at a Voodoo Donuts to get donuts.
Of course you did.
Yes, of course. And we got coffee and stuff. And she goes, what are we doing, Ricardo? I was like, I don't know. I was like, we're indulging, okay? But it was just her spirit and her sense of humor. I'm like everyone. I miss her. She was really cool.
And she is in a way, she is the humor in my film. She kind of brings that. She always had that, you know, deep laugh and just, you know, mm-hmm. kind of saw humor in a lot of things. And her passion for helping others was very evident. And, you know, unfortunately she couldn't help herself in some way.
Yeah.
And, so we continue to miss her. And here's what I'm hoping to do. So last Monday, a week ago, I went down to Capitol Hill and I met with Senator Torres's office. Mm-hmm. Senator Torres, or actually Congresswoman Torres, has written mm-hmm. the bill for the 911 Saves Act. And so I met with her staff. I met with the chief of staff for the co-signer for that bill. I think he's out of Pennsylvania. Fitzpatrick, I believe, is his name.
Fitzpatrick.
And then I met with some other members of Congress or their staffs, because you don't really meet with the members these days. But because they're too busy for you. But anyway, and my purpose was that I want to get Nicole's name attached to that bill, just to honor her legacy and for what she has done for 911 and for people around the world, really, in the 911 communicators, you know, community. I'm pushing for that. Her family is all behind that and is supporting that move. And I had an amazing message from Senator Collins up in Maine, who sent a video message for our events up there, and she recognized that. And I think we have someone on the Senate side that is willing to back this, and so we're really hoping to move this ball forward to get her name attached to that bill in some way. So anything you can do to help us with that move, I would love to, for your influence, yeah, to help kind of move the needle in that direction. Cause I think, you know, Torres,
yeah, for sure.
I think you had her on the show.
Yes.
So
I've had her on the show a few times, and the very first time that it happened, I couldn't believe that it was actually happening, but yeah, I've had her on. I've been in the office with her, and we recorded an episode there. And just a very cool person, and to have someone in that that place of mm-hmm. government that comes from, you know, dispatch, that is probably one of the coolest things. But again, applaud to you as well to do that in any way that I can help. I'm down. You'd let me know.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm in touch with her staff, and we're going to continue moving this forward. I think they're actually reviewing the film because they wanted to see the film. And we're hoping to somehow get a screening someplace on Capitol Hill for members of Congress I think we can use the film to kind of help move the needle forward with this bill. And because right now the bill is just sitting there, it's not even in committee yet. And it's just right. Like, what's happening? You know?
Yeah. So it's just in limbo. It's kind of been like that for a little bit, but I feel like it's really starting to get there. It's really being pushed, yeah, right now.
Right. A lot. So just for the people who maybe aren't familiar with it, can you kind of describe what it is and what it's going to do for 911?
Yeah. So basically the 911 Saves Act, what it is currently in the Office of Management and Budget. This is the part of government that runs all the different classifications of employment or jobs. And for 911 professionals, we are in the clerical class. So you've got clerical workers, administration, and you've got commercial dispatchers, like for, you know, taxis, semis, all of that stuff. That's where 911 professionals are at in that that class. They're not in what's known as the protective class, where police, fire, EMS, lifeguards are in there. I think waste management is in there as well.
That's ironic.
But dispatch is not in there. So from about 2016 on, the big 911 organizations have been kind of fighting for this. They've been fully fighting for this, to be able to reclassify dispatch so that we can be part of those first responders, because we're first responders as well. And what Congresswoman Norma Torres has done, along with Fitzpatrick, who's co-signed this, it's a bipartisan bill. It doesn't cost anything or anything like that. Really, it just takes the amount of people to say, yeah, let's go ahead and do this, and you move them into that class. As of right now, in the beginning of all of it, it's really for that recognition of being part of that first responder family. I mean, we know that it's there, but federally, for it to be switched, eventually what could happen, and it could affect or impact, retirement age, but it could also allow for, and don't quote me on this part, this part is something that I heard. So I don't know if this is still part of it, but being part of that class would potentially release some more funds in the sense of more training for, mental health and wellness, resources, a bunch of different things that police, fire, and EMS get that dispatch doesn't get at all. So that's, in a nutshell, basically what it would
be. And this is on the federal level. I think there have been some states that have enacted this within their states. I think California is one and a few others. Mm-hmm. But this would be kind of an overarching federal mandate or kind of classification for the whole country as a whole.
Yes. Yeah, there's several states out there that have already reclassified, but there are, where they call it reclassification, it's more so of a defining what a first responder is. So in some places, when they say reclassification, what they mean, again, in some places, some of them actually did reclassify, but there are a few of them where really what they did is they took the definition of what a first responder is and they added dispatch into that at the state level. I'm not sure what that does other than that recognition, but I believe with, the retirement or some other things, that stuff is already done at the state level. So that might help there as well.
And I think for my purposes, to my push to get Nicole's name attached is just to say, hey, here's someone who went through the system, as a secretary, so to speak, and look what it did to her. Look what all this, the impact that it had on her life and ended up ending her life. And, maybe not as a direct result of this, but an indirect result, of the struggles that she had. And a lot of those struggles came from her experiences as a dispatcher. And perhaps if she'd have had, earlier on training, more training for mental health, and she may have been able to push through those things, but we don't know.
Right.
But just to have her attached to that in some way honors her legacy and will move the needle forward to helping more dispatchers and first responders in the area of mental health and wellness.
That is perfect, because that week, that day, that next morning, there were a lot of us at a national conference in Nashville, and it was already spreading on social media. And I remember talking to a couple of friends, and I'm looking at my phone, and I thought, this can't be real. And I was reaching out to others saying, what happened? Because it wasn't exactly put out there. It was just, in memory, And I'm looking at all of this stuff and getting ready to go into the conference. There were a few speaking things and other things that was going on. And then someone sent me a private message and told me what happened. And I just remember standing there thinking, this can't be real. Like I expected to hopefully see her here at this conference or hear from her or something. And then to hear that and to read it and then go in to face everyone else. I mean, there was a lot of us that got together and was like, I can't believe this happened. And then you look around and you see everyone just, going about their day. And I'm just standing there just thinking, if you only knew, like she was an amazing person.
Yeah.
It was a hard day for everyone. It was I just wanted to share that experience. That was, wow.
It just reminds me of the importance of reaching out, of checking on people that we love and care for and just making that. And it did that for me. It was, initially my first reaction was I should have, could have done this and that. But I soon realized that no, that's not what would have saved her. You know, right. You'd probably had to been physically in the room to save her life, you know, because she was determined to do this in some unfortunate mm-hmm. way. But it just reminded me to reach out to those who may be struggling, to maybe even those who aren't struggling, just to reach out and to be connected, better connected to the people around me. And so it's inspired that in me.
Yeah, I ended up sharing the story that I shared with you about the barbecue and everything live, as well as on social media and stuff. And her sister got a hold of me. And what I ended up doing was I put together, I took off some of the beginning of the video that I recorded because there were some technical difficulties that happened that was kind of funny. But I cut that off and I sent that to her sister. And I said, you're the only one who's going to get to see this. I said, I'm not going to post it anywhere. I had thought about posting it so that people could hear her story. But because her episode is out there already, and she was also a speaker for one of the virtual events that I put on, and she shared that same story, I said, this original video, the very first time that that she did this presentation, it's only for you. And I sent that to her, and she was very grateful. And it felt good to be able to have that, you know, her video and give it to her family so that they will always have
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, so to lighten things up just a little bit, so you do a show, I think on Sunday nights, it's like a live and kind of crazy call show. What is that all about and why?
Yeah. So imagine listening when I was talking about that session that I do at conferences. When I was first starting to put this together, I thought, this is going to be an hour long session. I can't go a whole hour with everyone sharing those hard calls, even saves that are, you know, emotionally intense and everything. I have to have something to follow it up with. So I thought, well, what if I do 30 minutes of the Imagine Listening? I mean, the whole session is called Imagine Listening, but the first 30 minutes will be those emotionally intense calls. And then the last 30 minutes, let's do kind of an open mic type thing. And I thought, you know what? I think I'm just going to call it open mic. And that's the lighter side of dispatch. And that's where we share all the funny stuff that happens in 911. And man, let me tell you, some of the stories that come out, there's not a lot that embarrasses me, but some of them I blush. And then I think I might have to cut that one out of the episode, but I record them and I put them out there. And for the live one, for Open Mic Live, really how that one started, it was during the pandemic. It was when all of those protests and all of this stuff was going on where, you know, we've got COVID going on, right? You've got this pandemic that's going on. So everyone is already just up in arms over it, right? And scared. We don't know what's going to happen with it. And we're on lockdown and you've got to wear masks everywhere. If you're traveling or even going to the grocery store, whichever. Well, at the height of all of the protests that was going on top of the pandemic, I had just come back from camping with my family and we had no signal. So we had no idea what was going on over the weekend. And we get back and it was like, here in Fort Wayne, where I'm at downtown, it was chaos. Like there was crazy stuff going on there, and basically all over the United States, there was stuff. And, you know, going
just for perspective, that was for the 4 weeks ago. This, I mean, 4 years ago this week, like yesterday. Yeah,
are you for real? Yeah. Well, we're not. That's crazy. We're not far off right. from that time that I'm talking about. Yeah. So I mean, so 4 years ago, but so much that happened during that time, and I think it was about 11:30 at night. I was not tired at all. And I just kept reading and reading stuff that was going on. And I thought, you know what? I feel like maybe I felt like I needed to do something to kind of lighten the mood of a lot of stuff that was going on. Not that the whole world is listening to me, but you know, for the people that I know personally and some of those that are fans of the podcast, maybe they'll jump on. So I just went live randomly, and I said, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on in the world. I wanted to come on to just talk, see if you all wanted to talk. Let's check in with each other on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being crappy, 10 being awesome. How are you feeling right now? Because from what it looks like on social media, it doesn't look like everyone is doing that well. And I feel you. and let's just talk. Let's just share some stories. So then I just started sharing some of my own funny stories. And then the audience started sharing their funny stories. And I thought, maybe I should do this weekly. It started out as a Tuesday, Thursday thing. And there were tons of people on both days, but it was so much on top of everything that I was doing already. I had to cut it down to the one day. And eventually I moved it to Sundays because there was, again, a lot of stuff that was going on. And I thought, well, if I do it on Sundays, everyone's gone through the week. And then I can check on everyone during that day as we're going into the new week. So that's what Open Mic Live is. That's what it started. That's how it started out, was from just the chaos and heartache on social media and me just going live and sharing.
So what's one of the craziest stories you've heard on that show? Yeah.
On that one? Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of them where, here's the thing is, my mom watches that program.
There's probably some like R-rated stuff on there for sure, right?
Oh, there is more than R-rated on there. And because, I mean, in 911, this is stuff it's that life, you can't make up. Right, yeah. And a lot of times, there were a couple times actually that people sent me messages saying, man, I hope you're never the person who takes my call because you're making fun of all these people. And I had to tell that person, we're not making fun of people. We are joking about the incident, not the people. We're here to help those folks that are calling in. We take that very seriously. But if we didn't have some sort of humor about what it is that's going on, we would burn out faster than you can even think of. So I always tell people, we're laughing about the incident, not the people, just the incident. Because sometimes you think, is this real life? And it is. This stuff actually happens. Yes. So the reason I bring up my mom is because she'll just jump into the comments and she'll say, hola, and I'm like, oh, no. Because then it's almost as if it's the audience makes it their goal and mission to give me a call that is so embarrass raunchy. Mom, right? Right. Yes. And to see if I will actually say it out loud, because sometimes in some of the stories that they send, I'll either read it verbatim or I'll add in like different voices, like really play it up. And it's hilarious. Like, you know, at the end of it, I'll ask them again, what's your number at now? And those numbers always go up. But I tell people, even if your number doesn't go up, if it stays the same, it's fine because we were here together in support of each other. But, you know, for those stories, you know, a lot of them, you know, have to do with animals. You know, some of them have to do with men who do crazy things with their private parts. I mean,
put them in the wrong places.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you remember the show from MTV, and they did like four movies now, had Johnny Knoxville and Steve-O and all of those. They're some of those stories are kind of like that. And I always have to say, why are guys like this? Like, why are you going to try to do something that crazy involving one of the most sensitive parts on your body? And all for views. And that's what one of the stories was. Like, one guy was, there was a rope around his private parts, and he was supposed to pretend that he was going to jump off a picnic table to swing. Right. And people called on them because they were filming this. They were doing it for their YouTube channel. And what was supposed to happen was they were supposed to catch the guy so that he didn't like really fall. Well, because people called, officers showed up, and right when the person jumped, they all scattered. And what I just said is basically what happened.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So that was one of the stories.
What was that 911 call? Hello, 911. What's your emergency? I lost my...
Right. Yeah. Lost the coins, or but it was someone who had originally, I guess, called in, and they're just like, hey, you know, we've got some people out here. I think they're just, you know, doing prank stuff or whatever, but you should check it out. And they ended up getting out there when that happened. So I think it would be more so the radio traffic, because I think the officer would have had to have called in. I didn't go that deep into it because my mom actually popped on a little bit after that. And I'm pretty sure that was the one where I ended up saying, "How long have you been listening?" And she goes, "I've been here the whole time."
Thanks, Mom.
Right. Yeah. So it's stuff like that that ends up coming up. But there's other times, too, where, you know, I'll jump on and I'll just share like some funny stories from my time growing up, like my childhood into my, you know, teenage years. You know, I pretended to be my dad on the phone once when a teacher called. So I share that story and people are just, "Man, you must have been trouble." It's like, no, I was in trouble as a kid. I didn't want to get in trouble. So I took a shot, which ended up turning out bad, Conrad, because this was a government class and I was acing everything. It was just boring. So I was skipping the class. And where I was going to school, it was the same high school that my parents went to. And this specific teacher, my parents had as a teacher as well. So they knew he knew my parents. And, you know, he calls home. I end up answering and I hear his voice. And my dad and I kind of sound the same on the phone. So I took a shot. And about a month or so later, it's parent-teacher conferences. And my mom always would go with me. And the last second, my dad decides to go with me. But I wasn't thinking about anything because it was time had passed. Right. And that one teacher was the last teacher that we went to talk to. And I had gotten good reports from everybody. And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm doing cool. I'm awesome." And then we go to sit down and the teacher goes, "Oh, Richard, it was so good to talk to you, you know, a while back." And I'm just sitting there. And it was that moment that I knew that I was dead. Yeah, because I could feel my dad staring into my soul. And and I was instantly sweating. And I look over at my dad and he goes, "So we talked a while back." And I went, "Oh no." And I looked at my teacher and I said, "I'm sorry. It was actually me that you spoke to." And he goes, "Oh, okay." And my dad says, "You need to get out in the hallway." So I'm waiting there and my friends walk up and they're like, "Hey man, what's going on?" I was like, "Don't talk to me right now." They're like, "Why?" And my dad comes out and he's like, "Get your butt over here," in more of a colorful way. And I said, "Okay." And my friends go, "Oh dude, good luck." So there's stories like that I end up sharing on Open Mic Live too, but it's a lighthearted thing. And, you know, it's a lot of funny 911 stories.
I know I worked in a psychiatric hospital for 3.5 years way back when I was first out of college. And we had stories like that, and you have to laugh, right? Because laughter, as they say, is the best medicine. And it just kind of kind of brings you a sense of, you know, just, everything's going to be okay. Right. So let me ask you this. When you're absorbing all these stories and you're just bringing them into your program and, you know, however that works, what do you do to take care of you to make sure you're okay?
So this is going to be my explanation of this. It's the only way that I can think of that it makes sense. And when I've explained it to people, they understand as well. But of course, they have had to watch this specific movie that I'm about to bring up. And people who are going to hear this later are probably going to think, "This guy is nuts." But do you remember the movie The Green Mile?
I do.
Okay, so Michael Clark Duncan's character, he ends up basically sucking out the bad, absorbs it, and
spits it out.
Yep. Spits it out. And when he spits it out, he's completely drained. And I feel like almost in the same sense, that is what I'm doing with all of these stories. I'm absorbing. There've been a few times when I've done Imagine Listening where if I have the chance, I go back to my room and I just sit and I'm by myself and I'll just meditate. And that's basically what I do, whether it be yoga or meditation, that's how I release that. So in the same sense as that character, you know, when I've got all these stories that are coming in and I'm absorbing these, And, you know, some of them I will, especially the written ones, because there will be written stories as well. I don't read them in the sessions anymore because it takes time away from those mm-hmm. who want to say stories mm-hmm. out loud. So what I do is when I come back home after those sessions, I record each one of those stories to make sure that each one of them is in the episode, because they're all important. They're all powerful. But there are a few of those stories where, like, you can hear it in my voice where it cracks or I get emotional and I have to stop the recording and I'll just sit there and just be and meditate or whichever and get it out and then continue doing what I'm doing. So that's basically how I do it. I mean, it's also in conversation, you know, sometimes people walk up and say, so how was the session? And I'll say, well, if you really want to hear, I'll tell you, and I'll tell them a couple of those stories, not in much detail as what they've said in there. But, you know, afterwards I'll say, I'll be back. I'm going to go to my room really quick and just kind of decompress. Or I'll just throw on some music and lay there for a moment and just really kind of feel, you know, what it was that they brought out in that story and what I took in, and then just let it go and continue on.
I think sometimes our lives get so busy. In fact, today that was one of those moments where I've just been going. And it's a nice warm day today. And so I just sat outside on my deck for a few minutes and just soaked in the sun and just to be present, just to hear the birds and to see feel the sunshine on my skin and just to enjoy the moment. And I think sometimes we forget to do that. Just to get away and just to be and just to sit. And I think it's healing. It's healing to do that. And, you know, that's again a reminder for me, from you, just to be present and to make that and to be intentional about it. Like you said, you know, you go after the session, you go right to your room and you're intentional about that. I think we need to really focus on, okay, when can I do those moments? When can I step aside and put everything that's on my plate aside just to be present?
I think reflection is very important. And like you said, to take that moment, there have been a few times, and one that I can think of right off the bat, my kids were outside playing and I remember getting emotional watching them play because it was kind of rainy, like it was sprinkling, but there was a few puddles out there. And I remember watching them and I thought, man, I remember those times. And I tell my kids now, like, really enjoy those moments, because there's going to be a moment where you're not going to be able to reflect or take that time, but do so and make sure you do it, because it's very important. So I had been working like crazy and just on the go, just going. And I see them playing out there and I thought, man, they have not a care in the world. And those puddles are giving them so much joy. And I remember getting emotional thinking, I want to feel like that again. So I ran out there and played too.
Good for
but it
you.
It was a good moment, man. Like you were saying, we get so caught up in things sometimes that we don't take a chance to really reflect. And one of the things that I've been kind of pushing on my social media as well, there was something that I saw that it's kind of a longer quote, but I cut it down to just this small part, and it was progress, not perfection. Because I think sometimes we get caught up in that as well, where you're waiting for the right moment to do something, like it's got to be perfect. But if you are waiting that long, you're always going to be waiting. Yeah. You're never going to take that first step. And sometimes we get into that grind where we're grinding so much to live our wildest dreams that we don't stop to realize we're actually living our wildest dream right now, or you might be. You just don't realize it. You don't take that moment to step back and realize it. And there have been moments recently where I had to step back and think, I'm actually living that right now. Yeah. I just need to let it in.
Wow. That's a mic drop comment. We are, because this is the only life we have.
Right.
You know, you know, once you're in the grave, you're no longer on this earth, and you, this is what you have. So make the most out of every opportunity. I love, you know, I'm sure your kids reacted to you coming out and playing in the puddles.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Probably they did them some good too.
They were all about it. They're like, this is so much fun. I'm like, yeah, I wasn't thinking about, oh, there's a lot we're going to have to wash with our clothes and this and that. It wasn't even a thought in my mind because
sure.
Who cares? It's something you're going to have to do anyway. Just have fun. Just do it now.
We're going to name this episode, Go Play in the Puddles.
There you go. Hey, that'll be good. All about it.
I think I like that. So I want to wrap you this first.
Sure.
What would you say to those people who are kind of on the fence about, I really don't want to share my story. It's, you know, it's just depressing to me. It's, you know, I guess, what would you say to encourage someone to take that first step?
So I think what I would say is, you know, there's a lot of things that bother us and build up and our most important and biggest weapon that we have is our voice, especially as 911 professionals. It's what we use every day. And for a long time, it seemed like even though that's our most powerful weapon, our voice, we were not able to share it for fear that others might think certain things. So think about that as your powerful weapon, the fact that your story is important and that there are others out there who can learn from your experience. I mean, we understand each other and there is a safe place and you can share. So for me, when I was taking that first step, when I first started sharing, it almost immediately felt good inside and there was that weight lifted and a sigh of relief. So if anything, journal. If you want to take that first step, but you're scared to do it or you're afraid of what others might think, to use your voice out loud to amplify that, then simply take the first step of writing it down first. That's what I did. And that's what got me started to actually use my voice and get it out there. So I think that's where I would go with it first. Simply journal, simply write it down, especially those wins, because when you have those hard days, when you have those hard calls, you can look back at those wins and remember why you do what you do. So write it first. Journal it.
That's powerful. And if you're like me and don't like with pencil and pad, get your phone out and there's an app that you can just record it into.
Right. Yes. You can sit by yourself in your room or in your car or whichever and just record yourself talking about certain things. And then you can go back and listen to it. Because once you've made that progress, you can go back to that time and listen and be happy that you've gotten this far and be proud of that progression. Because again, progress, not perfection.
That's awesome. Well, Ricardo, this has been just a great conversation and I've really enjoyed talking to you. We could probably talk for hours about a whole bunch of stuff, but we've got to wrap this up. So I really appreciate you, appreciate what you're doing. Congratulations on all the success that you've had. So how many episodes have you done now? You said 500 and some?
Yeah. So episode 536 is going to be coming out. It'll be next week. So like the week of the 18th. Will be when that episode comes out. And if I could share really quick, the person that is going to be a guest on that episode, her name is Catherine. She's out of Idaho. And it was the funny thing how the whole thing happened. So a good friend of mine, I think you might know her. Her name is Dawn Shumway. And she is the one of the managers at that center out there in Idaho. It's Ada County. And she has my Imagine Listening book on her desk. And Catherine ended up going in there just to chat, saw the book, started flipping through it. And on page 72 is her story. And she goes,
wow,
Dawn, this is my story. I submitted it for the movement years ago and it's in the book. So Dawn put us together and I recorded an episode with Catherine And I'm really excited about it. So yeah, it's 536 episodes, and it's been crazy, but it's been a great experience, and I wouldn't change a thing, man.
Well, where can people find you?
So you can simply go to the easiest way to do it, because I'm all over social media and everything, but the easiest way to find everything I do is to simply go to links.co/WTT podcast, but that's links with two I's. .co/WTT podcast. You'll find all my social media, the latest episode, and also where to find Imagine Listening the book. So everything is on there. My email, all of it.
Awesome. Well, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes so people can access that right off.
Perfect.
And
thank you.
I encourage you to go out and take a listen, buy the book, and follow Ricardo in all the socials. I think you'll find his work inspiring and sometimes funny, sometimes sad. And sometimes just weird, depending on what story is out there.
Right.
No offense to you.
No, but, not taken at all, because it's the truth. There's a lot of weird stuff.
But I do think you'll find a lot of great things there that will help you and that will inspire you. So thanks, Ricardo, for being on this program today and for taking time to do that.
Thank you. It was an honor, man, as always.
Ricardo, thank you so much for being on the program today. I've really enjoyed our conversation. You are an inspiration to many of us, and myself included, and I know that your work is continuing to inspire people. You save lives with the work that you do. So thank you for being a voice for the 911 community out there. And for all of you 911 professionals, thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for answering the phones, for taking care of those emergencies, and being the first responders. I really appreciate you. And by the way, if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe. And if you are watching on YouTube, do the same thing. Subscribe and then share with your network to let other people know. If you gained something out of this show today, if it meant something to you, if you got something out of it, please share with your network. And if you feel so inclined, leave a review. I'd really appreciate that. And if you really like it, put 5 stars in. That would just make my heart sing. So, hey, thanks so much for watching. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in next week for a brand new episode of the First Responder Wellness Podcast. And as always, if you need someone to talk to and don't know where you can turn, you can dial 988 for help. And I ask you to go out there, take care of yourself, take care of those around you, and go out and do something great in the world. We'll see you next time.